So anyway, see what the questions are today. Here. Number one. Dear Ajahn, I find it very difficult. Yeah, so do I. To observe my breath because it seems so short and faint. I think you're dying. That'd be bad myself. I find it very difficult to observe my breath because it seems so short and faint. Also, I have the habit of taking a deep breath every time I observe it for a while. Am I being distracted or am I following it wrongly? Thank you. Okay, what happens is that as you get more still, the mindfulness gets stronger and it's easier to be able to observe the short and faint breaths. However, if you are getting quiet but the mindfulness is not strong enough yet, sometimes it's hard to follow the breath. So the main thing is what I said, I think, the second day. Get the mindfulness very strong and then you'll be able to see the very refined breaths. And it's easy to see it because there's lots of lights on in the mind. Just like you can't see where you're going to sit. I'm sure enough someone's going to fall over each other in the evening here when you try and get in here in the dark. And someone's going to scream probably. Ah, we're being molested. It's just somebody trying to find their space, that's all. But anyhow, that when it's dark you can't see very clear, but when it's bright you can see everything. And this is exactly what's happening with the breath. The mindfulness needs to grow a bit stronger to be able to see that short and faint breath. And what you do here is taking a brief deep breath every time you observe it, just so you can really catch it. Actually, sometimes Ajahn Chah used to do that. He told me that sometimes he couldn't really find the breath, he'd take a deliberately long breath or deep breath, so he can just get his mindfulness on the breath again, so then you can carry on watching the breath. But just bear with it for a while, because as you get peaceful and calm and the mind gets brighter and brighter, you find you'll be able to watch that subtle breath, especially with some times of the day when you're energized, when you feel really good, and those are the times you can be able to watch the breath very easily. So you're not doing it wrong, keep on innovating and you'll get there. Sometimes though, that maybe this is a time to start talking about when you get a bit bored with the breath, and that's sometimes the mindfulness doesn't work very well, because boredom means you sort of take away the energy from the breath. Which is why that's the time you can start messing around with the breath, and you can start doing my Ajahn Brahm's original backwards breath meditation, only taught by me, never before heard in the history of Buddhism. And you all know what backwards breath meditation is, I hope, by now, because you've heard it before, many of you. It's whenever you're breathing, even like when I ask some of you to breathe in and out three times and then open your eyes, you always start with the in-breath first. So backwards breath meditation is starting with the out-breath. So it's not breathing in, out, in, out. Out, in. Out, in. Out, in. You try it. Breathe out first and then breathe in. It actually feels much different. So it's called playing around with the breath. Do the backwards breath meditation. Only taught here. No one else is crazy enough to teach things like that. And if you really want to play around even more, there's also the three in-breaths to each out-breath meditation. So you play around a bit, because it makes some of the mindfulness. I told you, in the evening you always get the giggles. In the playing around a bit just makes the mind happy, and when it's happy it's got energy, and when it's energy you're not sleepy anymore. So play around, have fun. And then you'll see the breath very easily, because after you, have a bit of fun and games, it's so easy to watch the breath, because you energize the mindfulness. Next question. I do not know what nimitta is. Does that mean I would not get to the nimitta stage in my meditation? Gee, you don't know what nibbana is, but everyone gets there eventually. So you don't have to know what it is. Just follow the instructions and the nimitta comes to you. And what a nimitta is, if you read the book, or many of you have had the experience, is a beautiful light comes up into the mind. And it's so common that people think, oh, there's somebody shining a light in my face. Oh, that there is, the sun is rising. But then you think, my goodness, it's 8 o'clock in the evening. It can't be the sun. There isn't any flashlights. So, after a while you realize, wow, that was actually a nimitta. So it's not that uncommon. It comes up to people, but Or nearly always they think, oh, it can't be an emitter. But nearly always it is. So it will come, but it does not come when you want it to come. If you expect it, it will never come. Because I said expectation means looking outside, expecting. And you've got to inspect, not expect. Okay? So, and you should have insight, not excite. No excitement. Incitement. So anyway, just playing around with words. But limiters, they come. So don't worry about those. They'll be there. Could it be... Oh, this is interesting. Could it be that sexual intercourse, at its highest, is a great act? I think someone's been fantasizing. Here we go. Could it be that sexual intercourse at its highest is a great act of intimacy, trust, caring and love, which is a basic for forming and sustaining human community? It is then more than a big uncomfortable sneeze, or is that squeeze? No answer needed, just a little repartee. Wow, you get some great questions here on a Sunday night on Easter. Yeah, I think I will. I'll pass that one. Quit while I'm ahead. But nevertheless, I'm going to analyse the handwriting on this. And find out who the scallywag was. Probably one of the monks. I like the nuns over there. If you can remember the feelings and the inner experience of deep states of meditation from past experience of meditation, can you construct a sequence pathway into those states by arranging them sequentially and then practice feeling the feeling sequence pathway to deeper states when you are not formally meditating? E.g., during states of casual reverie, in order to do, as you said last night, increase familiarity and comfort in achieving those states and access them more easily. I think you actually... What we're actually saying is like imagining sort of those deep states of meditation. And maybe it's that imagining their factors. And what it was like when you were in a nice meditation. You imagine that, but not just one thing, just all little factors. And imagine putting them all together. And will actually get you to that place. It's an interesting thing to do, but it's a bit too much work. Because remember, all these states are states of stillness, peace and simplicity. And that sometimes gets a bit too complex to do. So I think if it's just one little imagination, especially imagining the peace, the tranquility, the calmness, that's the best thing to imagine. Because that's sort of like the ground, the cause where these beautiful states come from. When the mind is peaceful and calm and still, and utterly content, you don't want anything in the world. And if you stay in that type of contentment and stillness and inner peace for long enough, all these states actually grow from there. Like flowers growing in the flower bed. The peace and the calmness and stillness, that's like the flower bed. And the nimittas of the jhanas, they're like the flowers which arise from that beautiful stillness and peace and calm. So your job is actually to cultivate the flower bed. The seeds are already there, they just come up by themselves. To cultivate as much peace, contentment, stillness as you possibly can. If you can't do that, imagine it. Dear Champa, please share with us what you see when you meditate. So N is meditation. Success part of... This is actually... Unfortunately, I don't do SMS messages. So I think you have to sort of bear with us and just try and put all the words in. Is meditation success part of a mist to become a venerable? I know. Okay. Please share with us what you see when you meditate, and is meditation success part of a must to become a venerable? Thank you. Okay, what I see in meditation is peace and stillness and calm and beauty and oh, it's so nice. So that's the main thing to see in meditation, just some peace. And is success in meditation a must to become a venerable? It's hard if you haven't got some good meditation when you live the life as a monk or a nun, simply because that's all you've got to do all day. You get bored out of your skull if you sort of, you know, can't sort of get some peace and meditation. because you know, in monasteries like and like even Dhammasara or Bodhinyana monasteries, there's nothing much you can do if you can't meditate. Which is why that you know we want to sort of encourage lots and lots and lots and lots of meditation. And it's the happiness of a monk. Actually, the Buddha actually said that the jhanas are the happiness of a monk. And it's a wonderful thing to understand that. That's you know, where we get off on. That's our joy. That's our happiness. So it is, you know, it's not a must, but it's very important. It's sometimes very hard to know to live that monastic life without the meditation. When you have the meditation, it's a great lifestyle. And no worries, nothing to do, just sit and bliss out all day, and just teach a few people, share a few jokes. So it's a nice lifestyle. You know, that you help a lot of people and you have a nice life yourself. How do we use meditation to develop insight, e.g. to help make some big life-changing decision? Remember, you don't develop insight, just insight comes to you. Remember that story which I gave about the walking up the hillside to Bodhinyana Monastery? The slower I went, the more I saw. I didn't need to develop seeing deeper. It just comes as a natural result of going slower, building up your mindfulness, and not going so fast. You see more, you notice more. And there I was just noticing the beauty of the hillside. The insight notices more like the beauty of this moment. The beauty of simplicity. And the happiness of just being in this moment, not wanting anything. So, you know, see the Four Noble Truths. The noble truth of suffering is caused by craving. And you stop craving, you're still, you're not moving. And then you can see the end of craving is happiness. So it's right there in front of your eyes because you've done it. So this is actually what we mean by the insights. You have to have experience to get those insights. But I will say more about insights in a talk. The big life-changing insights will come later on. And another talk in a couple of days' time. Stay tuned. Does anyone have any comments about this so far? Okay, here we go. Next question. What is a skillful way to deal with thoughts of people that have harmed us in the past without getting caught up in reliving the unpleasantness? Take them out. No, not the people, that's actually the joke of Albert Placid. Last October, I think, we're giving a... Albert Placid is the abbot of the Benedictine Monastery in New Norcia. He's a really good friend. And we were doing this... It was a conference of, I think it was university or school chaplains. So I've been in Australia having the conference of chaplains here in Perth, at UWA, University of Western Australia. So I did a session, one of the classes, with Abbot Placid. And when all the people in the audience, they're all sort of chaplains, and one was actually goes on the radio, he's got a radio program out east somewhere, I forget what his name was now. And he had made this comment, he said, "Look, you know, you two get on so well together. Now, this is my experience as well, being a chaplain at university, that, you know, we get all the, you know, the Buddhists and the Hindus and the Christians and the Muslims get on." He said, "The one people we can't get on with are these Pentecostals, you know, the born-again Christians. We just can't get on with them. We can't work with them." And so I asked Abbot Placid, you know, the Catholic abbot of the Benedictine Monastery, "What should we do with these Pentecostals? What's your advice, Abbot?" And that's what he said, "Take them out one by one." I cracked up, and so did everyone else. That's outrageous for an abbot to say that. And then he explained, after we all calmed down, he said, "Look, just take them aside. Don't deal with them together, because they just support each other. Take them aside and talk to them about what real Christianity is." That's what he said. But anyway, what's this question? Oh, thoughts of people that have harmed us in the past. Okay, the basic insight there is every time you think of them having harmed you, you let them harm you one more time. Every time you remember the pain they caused, you allow them to hurt you again. Think about it. They've hurt us once, just drop it, and then they can't hurt us again. But every time you remember that, you're hurt one more time. When you see it that way, you think, no, I'm not going to let this person, they've hurt me once, once is already once too many. I'm not going to let them hurt me again. I'm going to drop it. In the law of karma, what they've done, they're going to get the karmic result of that. So you don't have to think, oh, I've got to make justice happen. I've got to teach them a lesson. I've got to somehow get my own back on them. It's really good being a Buddhist. You can be completely lazy, irresponsible, because karma does your work for you. You can just say, okay, karma will do that. I can let go, forgive. And I don't need to allow that hurt, which they did to me, to reverberate again and again and again. They hurt me once, they're not going to hurt me again. I'm going to forget it. Why can't we do that? I'll tell you why we can't do that, is because of our conditioning is always to take up the difficulty, the pain, the things which went wrong in the past, and we cultivate that. It's sort of a perversion of the ego to think that, you know, we've been hard done by, we're victims. And we become that victim because we think we can get some sympathy. But Ajahn Chah's famous simile of the two chicken farmers. I tell this very often on a Friday night and on a Tuesday night at Armidale. Two chicken farmers, the first chicken farmer went to the shed in the morning to collect the produce of the night before. So he took the basket and filled the basket with chicken shit and left the eggs in the shed to rot. That was a very stupid chicken farmer. Chicken farmer number two took the basket and collected all the eggs and he left the shit to rot so he could go into the house and make a nice omelette for his family and sell the rest of the eggs in the market for cash. That was a very smart chicken farmer. And that was a story told by Ajahn Chah. You know the meaning of that story? When you go and collect the stuff of your past, what happened to you? What do you collect? The shit or the eggs? What type of chicken farmer are you? The first type or the second type? Why do we always collect what went wrong? And all the hurt and the harm, all the shit of life. We should leave that in the past to rot and just collect the eggs or the wonderful things which happened to us today, yesterday, last week, the year before. Be a chicken farmer who just collects the eggs. They're much more valuable and they certainly taste much better. So do you understand that simile? So why is it when someone hurt us and harmed us or said the wrong thing to us, that's what we remember? We just collect that stuff. And all the kind, wonderful, happy things which happen to us, we just take it for granted, we forget it. So be like chicken farmer number two. Just collect the eggs. Okay, that's the thoughts of the past. Just collect the good stuff. Here we go. Thank you, Ajahn Brahm, monks and nuns. Sometimes during meditation my head gets lightheaded and it feels like it is swaying slowly. At this stage my mind is a lot calmer compared to the start of the meditation, though I am still aware of sounds and thoughts creeping in. Should I place my attention on the state of my mind or should I continue with the breath? Always continue with the breath when you feel like you're getting a bit lightheaded. It just means the mind is getting peaceful and still. Don't worry about the lightheadedness. Just go back to the breath and stay with the breath. Make it so peaceful and calm. And if you feel like it is swaying slowly, there is, I could actually mention this, there's actually stages of meditation. It is basically when this perception starts to mess around. When actually you feel like you are swaying or you feel like you're swaying backwards and forwards. And this is so common that people tell me, oh, sort of when I was meditating I was swaying backwards and forwards. I say, no you weren't. They said, yes they were. I said, no I wasn't. I said, no I was. Or something, anyway, you know what I'm talking about. Because they say one thing and I know the other. Because they feel they're swaying and it really feels like that, but you're not. So sometimes I've threatened to actually to get a video camera and video them. And they're sitting perfectly straight. But it feels like you're swaying. All it is, the perception is messing around. And sometimes people feel like their head is expanding, getting really big, and filling the whole room with their body. They feel they're floating up in the air. You're not floating up in the air. You're just what perception does at that particular stage. The mind is getting strong, the mindfulness is just really powerful, and you can start having these different perceptions of what's going on. When that happens, just go with it, this is fine, there's no problem at all. If your head expands, there's plenty of room for everyone else in this meditation room. You're not going to squash other people against the wall. So just enjoy it. It's another nice result of a deepening meditation. Then you get past that and you get more still. So whatever happens, feeling you're swaying or lightheaded, just make peace with it. Stay with the breath if you can. And just make it so peaceful, beautiful breath. So these little things with the body, they just disappear after a while. And all you've got left is the breath and nothing else in the whole world. Just watching this breath going in and breath going out, and there's no other experience at all. So you don't feel the body anymore, you don't know what it's doing. And you can't hear any sounds, just the breath, that's all that's left. Focused and still. So if those things happen, you start thinking you're swaying. Most of the time you're not. It's only when you're sleepy you start swaying. The Metta Sutta seems to have it all. Do we need anything else? Yeah, you need your breakfast, you need your lunch, you need your sleep at night. But the Metta Sutta is very, very good. And it shows, you know, may you be able and upright. So now it gets to the third and fourth day of the retreat, you should be more upright. It doesn't say may you be able and horizontal. So you spend more time upright. And gentle and whatever, all the other things. It's a beautiful chant, that's actually why. You know, it's a nice thing to chant every morning and evening. And when you do this chanting, listen to what's being chanted. Don't just be like a parrot and have your mind somewhere else. Because it's got some beautiful words. And those little words, you know, when you actually think about them, they actually help your meditation. The ones I said already I like the best, contented and easily satisfied, not demanding in nature. You don't demand anything for your meditation. You don't demand, if I don't get jhana, Bianca, I want my money back. You don't go demanding like that. You're so contented, easy satisfied. You get a moment's peace, oh, that's good enough for me. And that's really important because that actually what makes the meditation deepen. So yeah, the meditation is really nice. During meditation, when I know, Ajahn, during meditation, when I know that I am breathing in and breathing out, and if I feel pain, my leg is that. If I feel pain, my leg is that normal, or am I not doing it properly? I have changed posture. You lose mindfulness. Okay, I think I understand that. If you are meditating and you're watching the breath and you get pain in the leg. Or pain anywhere else. See if you can ignore it first of all and just stay with the breath. Keep the pain on the edge. Don't center on it. Don't make it a big thing. Very often the pain will just fade away. However, if it really does come up and it starts bothering you, then do what we call pressing the pause button. So you pause the breath meditation and you put your attention on the leg or whatever it is, and then you just gently and very mindfully change your posture around. Do it slowly, do it carefully. And once you've got into a nice posture again, you've changed the positions of your legs, you press the pause button again, you can carry on pretty much where you left off with the breath. That's why I call it like the pause button. So you're not losing anything, you're not going backwards, you're not going forward, you're just pausing as you change your posture. And a lot of the times you find that's a much better way to deal with aches and pains in the body than just bearing with it. Because if it really gets a strong ache and a strong pain, then you lose all your meditation. And just if you can just press the pause button and change your posture, then you can sit much longer and get much deeper. So sometimes just doing something about it is important. So the same if you get an irritation in your throat and you want to cough. Just press the pause button and cough and get it over and done with and then go back to your meditation. If you don't do that, and it happens all the time in meditation retreats, people think, no, I mustn't cough, I mustn't cough. And it's like a volcano building up power. And when you do cough, everyone hears it, even in the church next door, and you spray all this stuff over everybody within 5 meters of you. So please don't do that. If you're going to cough, just cough and get it over and done with, rather than giving the volcanic coughs. So, be gentle. And you can move, you can cough, because it just disturbs a tiny bit. And it's very easy to get back to where you were before. Dear Ajahn, I feel a change for the better in my meditation today. It won't last. These things come and go. Anyway, very good, excellent, well done. Despite this, or because of this, I contemplate the feeling that sometimes arises that I have one foot stuck in the world, or the grave, and one foot pointing along the beginning of the path, and I'm straddling no man's land. This is something that my Christian upbringing did not prepare me for, although it helped in other ways. In worldly terms, the path of purification through meditation seemed to make no sense. Somehow, though, I find it makes so much sense. The question is how to increase the sense of sense through meditation and letting go. Or is this just doubt? Thanks. Okay. Now, it's a lot of times that sometimes, instead of like thinking too much, to trust the emotions and just what feels good. Because so there was a great teaching which the Buddha gave to Upali, who became like the Vinaya expert and, you know, one of the great arahats. He gave the same teaching to the first bhikkhuni, Mahaprajapati, and it's a brilliant teaching. He said, you know what the path is, what Dhamma is. And if it feels peaceful, you're letting go, it feels like you're renouncing and things are fading away and things are stopping. Now this is like the taste, the sign of Dhamma, the sign you're on the path. So you don't need too much description, but feel that path. And that's why, something I said at the beginning of this retreat, meditation is like an emotional journey, not an intellectual journey. Peace is a feeling. The bliss, you know, the jhanas is an emotion. Which is why that sometimes people get in deep meditation, they start crying. It's an emotional high. It's not an intellectual thing. So feel your way into this meditation path. And don't need to sort of examine it and analyze it yet. But feel it. It feels good. It feels right. It feels peaceful. It feels pure. It feels free. And that's good enough. And follow that. And whenever you get to a crossroads in these meditations, you don't know what to do next because you don't remember the instructions or the instructions were never given. Feel it. This feels nice, it feels peaceful, it feels free. Go for it. And that's actually the way one makes progress. And feels one's way through these different stages of meditation. And you come at, you know, to all these edges, to the next stages of meditation. And it feels right. You don't know where you're going or why you're going there until you've been there. But it feels so good, it feels so right, it feels so peaceful, it feels so pure. And that's good enough. Trust in that. Obviously afterwards, when you've been into the deeper stages of meditation, then you can analyse it, then you can know what it is. And that's when all the Dhamma and the explanations start to make sense. But before that, you have to really just rely on your feelings and your sense. Yes?
So what happens when you like inside meditation, outside meditation starts to reflect each other and blur. Because those states you're starting to experience meditation like you described start to happen all the time. Outside, when you're going down the shopping, you're sitting there having a cup of tea, all that sort of stuff. Blurring. And my question to you is, when am I meditating, when am I not meditating, and what is the role of formal meditation?
Okay, so remember that there's a meditation we're doing here is actually to calm the mind down, calm, 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 make it still, make it peaceful. But there's also the time when you've got to put forth effort and do things. You know, you've got to go and brush your teeth. You can't just say, let go, let go, let go. I'm not going to brush my teeth. You can't, when you wake up in the morning, you can't say, let go. Remember, be still, 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 still. Don't move, don't move, don't move. Otherwise you'll never get up in the morning. But the point is here that there's time to put forth effort. My physical effort. And where that becomes very clear is with practicing loving kindness and compassion, which means you recognize your duties and you do them compassionately. selflessly. So there are times when you have to sacrifice your stillness, because it needs to be done for the sake of, you know, your own physical body happiness and for the sake of other people's happiness as well.
I'm talking about those times when, for example, you wake up in the morning, you might not get out of bed for half an hour because now you're not meditating, but you start, well, I might just start to remember the states of meditation, going in and out of them. That's one example. Another one would be sitting down on the porch having a cup of tea. These are not actually doing, like, you know, I'm talking driving.
Okay, yeah.
The passive time.
I get it. When the passive times, then again, you can do some meditation, but you've got to be very careful that those passive times don't happen, say, when you're stuck at a red traffic light and then you go into jhana and all the people afterwards are honking, 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 and you're just, you know, holding up the traffic.
Because
at the right time, yes, yes, safety limits is the operative word. So, you know, you've got to be in the right place at the right time. Okay. There we go. I'll go through the questions quite quickly. I'll pause a bit. I find myself getting very angry and resentful in the meditation hall at people who open lollies, bring watches or mobile phones that beep or endlessly fidget with their things. Could you please tell me a strategy of preventing these bad feelings arising? Yes, bring a gun next time. Shoot those people so they will never come again. That's the only way you'll prevent it. Obviously that's not possible. So you have to just accept the fact that a person is something which makes a noise. That's its nature. I've never yet seen a person who doesn't make a noise from time to time. So if you're holding a retreat with 50 people, you have 50 noise machines. So the thing is that you just make peace with it. And, as I said the other day, that story of Ajahn Chah, when there was a lot of noise from the villages outside and we tried to stop it and we couldn't, so we asked Ajahn Chah, can you use your influence to tell them to be quiet? And he said, it's not the noise that disturbs you, it's you who disturb the noise. So whoever asked that question, they disturbed the noise of that person rustling or burping or whatever else they did. You disturb them, they never disturb you. When you understand the meaning of that, wow, you've got a great insight into the deep meditations. This is nature. So you allow nature to be and you just ignore it. You don't make a big thing of it. It's not prominent anymore. And that way, you don't focus on it, it just goes off your radar. If it's a problem, you make a problem of it and you want to sort of change it and work it all out and figure it all out so that people will never make that noise again, that's doing something. That's a cause of restlessness. And also, they make a noise once and then we think about it many times. There's somebody's watch beeps. It only a second, if that, it beeps. Then we think about it, it's not beeping, it shouldn't beep, it's spoiling my meditation, you know, we should have a metal detector here so that no watches can come through. Or whatever else you think of your strategies, you know, find out who it was. It was over there somewhere, in that direction. Well, let's locate it a bit closer next time and find out who it is. And let's ban them from the retreat, let's expel them. Now, you've already wasted about 3 or 4 minutes thinking about that. And that's a problem, that's a disturbance, you know, your reaction to it. The beep is only a second, but the reaction lasts for hours sometimes. That's what we mean by disturbing the noise. So the noise is just out there. As soon as it's finished, we let it go. If it's not the noise of a beeper, it's a helicopter, or it's a door banging, or it's those bloody birds outside making a racket. Gee, can we shoot the birds while we're at it? There's always something making a noise. So because of that, we have to accept that to let the noise be. And when the noise happens, it doesn't echo inside of us. It doesn't resonate. When the noise is gone, we don't even remember it, we don't think about it. That's actually how we deal with noise. And that's how we deal with everything else in life. You may have what you think is a bad meditation. Doesn't matter, okay, that's the past, it's already gone now. You don't allow the bad meditations to infect the present moment. So whatever's gone, you immediately let it go. So you're free, you've got nothing to do. So when people make noise, the noise is already gone by the time you've heard it. So don't even think about it again. That way you don't sort of get resentful and angry. You can do that is metta meditation. Metta meditation is the door of my heart is open to all of you, with all of your noise. So that way you actually open the door of your heart to whatever's happening now, no matter what's occurring. That's everything you can do. Because you can't control everybody in this retreat. You can't stop them doing these things. It's just the nature.
What is the tool that you use to prevent that? Not just here, but say outside of the neighbours. Is it what you were talking about this morning, not labelling the noise, just
let
it be a noise?
That's right, because it depends what the noise is. You know, when those people in Thailand were playing that music, the worst part about it was I didn't like that type of music. If it was like Jimi Hendrix, I wouldn't have complained so much. It's a type of noise, isn't it? But sometimes it's nice noise. Oh, that's really nice. If it was like a nice sort of chime on their mobile phone, you think, oh, that's really interesting. So sometimes we're a bit sort of selective on what noises we sort of complain about and what noises we think are beautiful and wonderful. So, if that is your neighbour then, if it really is a big problem, you can maybe try and ask them kindly to please be calm, please be peaceful, and maybe don't sort of put that on at that particular time. But in the end, you can't control them. So in the end, you just don't allow what other people do to take away your happiness and peace. You can make peace with the noise, not make peace against the noise. Make peace with it. You can't sort of stop it, then just allow it to be. Okay, the last question, so I can turn off my noise. If you are doing present moment awareness correctly, then you should not hear any external sounds, e.g. other people coming to the retreat and the sounds of, what is this? Sounds of by, what does that say? Sounds like biscuits. Sounds of biscuits? Okay, sounds of biscuits. I don't know, it sounds something like that. Anyway, if you're doing present moment awareness correctly, you should not hear. You can hear those sounds or any sounds, but in present moment awareness, they don't echo. As soon as they've finished, they're completely gone and you can't hardly even remember them, what they were. You're just in this moment, so the past is never any problem. Because as soon as it's happened, it's completely gone and finished. Which is why we call it you don't collect the baggage of the past. When you think of this retreat as like letting go of baggage, being free, being easy, being peaceful, you can understand that the more baggage you carry in your meditation, just the heavier you are and the less free you feel. So you try and get rid of as much baggage as possible. And much of that baggage is what you collect from the past. Who said what to who and why and when. And also what you did so far in this retreat. And many have already collected 4 days of baggage. 4 days or 3 days? 3 and a bit days of baggage. From what's happened so far in this retreat. So please, the rubbish bin is sort of outside, please put all the past in the rubbish bin so you have no past at all. So tonight, you just put all the rubbish of the last three and a half days in the bin. So you wake up in the morning as if it's the first day of a retreat, completely free of the baggage of the past. And do that every night. Write down everything which has happened to you today. Put on a piece of paper and throw it in the bin. And let it all go, all the past. So the following morning you start free, completely empty. Just like a baby, you've been reincarnated. Or as they say in this place, resurrected. Completely free with a black slate. So it's nice actually being able to do that, being able to let go of the past. Every moment, just as soon as it happens, you let it go. As soon as it happens, you let it go. As soon as it happens, you let it go. You don't keep anything. What that also means is, you know, when sometimes you have a meditation, it's not working. And you can flip straight away into having a beautiful meditation. Only if you know how to let go of that past. You don't allow what, you know, is a so-called failure of the past to stop you achieving in the present moment. And it's wonderful, just you can do that. You can be completely free of the past. It doesn't matter what's happened. It's not going to affect what's occurring now in the present moment. So that way you can actually be peaceful. And it means whatever's happened, you don't take it back to your bed at night, so you can sleep very peacefully and you wake up empty. A new day. And you're not carrying anything into the morning. So you literally are like the person with no possessions. I'm not talking about your material possessions, I'm talking about the mental possessions. Because we possess the past, so we accumulate it, and as I said, we usually collect the negative stuff. And that really hinders our freedom to meditate peacefully and deeply. So if you can, find some way of not possessing the past. Emptying it all out. Not even remembering it. And that way, you're far more free. And the meditation gets deeper and more peaceful. So it doesn't matter who said what to whom and why and who made the noise and why they did it and what's happened to you so far in this retreat. We call that in meditation the beginner's mind. Because it's well known that when people first start meditating, or maybe their first retreat, sometimes amazingly, how many people get into deep meditation? You know why? Because they don't know what they're doing. Because they don't know what they're doing, they've got no expectations, haven't got a clue what's going to happen. And sometimes they get the really deep meditations because they've got no expectations or anticipations. Once you've done a few retreats, you know exactly what's going to happen. All these anticipations, expectations, all your experience gets in the way. So a beginner's mind, just throw all that away and be a beginner again. So like the empty mind, beginner's mind, so you're not burdened by anything which happened in the past. And no expectations, just be in this moment. And then you're free. So be a beginner, beginner's mind. It's also you don't get so critical of yourself if you're only a beginner. People have been on these retreats 6 years, 10 years, you've been a monk for so long. Ah, I'd better get my act together. I'll just be a beginner. It's much more fun. So, any comments or questions about that so far? I went through the early questions too quickly, so now I'm ad-libbing, playing for time. I've got another 10 minutes to go. Yes?
In expectations, when you say drop expectations, like, the only way to do it is to know that you've got the expectations.
Then awareness really helps. And also just little strategies. So expectations, it's... I was going to give this talk later on, but I'll just give a little preview of a little talk on how to let go even more. We've got something which we call like giving. When you give something, sometimes people expect one of these receipts where you can claim back on tax afterwards. Or they expect they can get their name on some plaque on the wall that, you know, you were the great donor. Or they can expect that, you know, your name will be announced and everyone will clap. Now, Irene donated 50 cents to the retreat centre. Whatever. But there's expectations from something you'd give is what we call doing a business deal. You're getting something back for what you gave. And instead of doing that, we can have this pure giving. So you give all of your mind to this moment. Just out of faith in the Buddha, if you like. You don't expect anything back at all. You don't expect peace, you don't expect stillness, you don't expect jhanas, you don't expect enlightenment. But if you do, you're doing business. You're a business meditator, not someone who's letting go. You're trying to get something out of it. And that's what expectations are. So because, you know, we live in a business society, and I don't mean just, you know, with money, you know, it's a quid pro quo, I help you, then you help me back. We always expect something from our endeavours. And we have to look at it a different way. This is not trying to get something, it's trying to let go of things. We don't meditate to gain, we meditate to abandon things. So that way the idea of expectations gets almost like obliterated. We get beyond expectations. That's not what we're there for. We're trying to abandon things, not expect and get something later. And that's what pure giving is. We give expecting nothing back in return. Not business. So I give to the moment when I meditate. Don't expect anything. Don't expect jhanas or enlightenment. I just give to this moment. When you're giving, that's the fastest way to jhanas and enlightenment. So you say that I'm giving a dhana next time you meditate. I'm giving all my energy of my mind and my body to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. By just giving it to the moment. I don't expect anything back. No recognition. No sort of tax receipts. Nothing. Just pure giving. That's called letting go. And that way the expectations, they vanish. You're in the moment. Abandoning, not trying to get anything. Does that make sense to you? So that's a great actual way of actually, you know, giving to the moment. Full 100%. Not expecting anything back. And you get so peaceful that way. You get so much fun. Any other comments or questions? There's another one here. I think I'll do this one. This is one. Oh, actually, where did this one come from? It must come from the Davis. I'll just put it in there. Dear Ajahn Brahm, is it important to be here now, wherever we are or whatever we are doing? However, in this increasing hurried world of ours, multitasking seems to be a necessity. Can you comment, please? Yeah, okay, be here now, wherever we are, whatever we are doing. Of course, you shouldn't always just be here now. You should also be planning where you're going to go next sometimes. Because I've got a plan to go to the toilet soon. And I'm not going to do it here and now. That's called pee here now. I get quite desperate for funny stories. Don't encourage me. So, there's a time to be here now and be in the present moment. And that's where we're meditating. But there's also a time when you've got to sort of plan what you're going to do next. But the thing is, with most people, we plan too much. And when you're sitting down on your cushion, that's not the time to plan. That's the time to be here now. But, you know, when you're actually cooking the dinner or the lunch or whatever, or you're doing your chores, then, you know, you have to sort of go to those places, you've got a plan to get there, you have to have some future awareness. But the point is that when you're sitting meditation, that's the time to be here now. So as I said earlier, you put your effort in to get to the cushion or the stool. Once you're at the stool, then you let go and you're just here now. But you've got to get to the stool first of all. You've got to go to the toilet first of all, otherwise you're in big trouble. And increasing this hurried world of ours, multitasking seems to be a necessity. Can you comment, please? Yes, you can do multitasking. When you're in the toilet, you can watch your breath. Sitting there, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in. But please don't get into jhana, because somebody might be waiting to use the cubicle next. But that's worth. Do sort of like efficient or skillful multitasking, but don't do too many things. So, you know, don't just, I don't know, what else can you think there? You know, don't just do walking meditation and breath meditation. That's actually a good point. Don't do walking meditation and breath meditation at the same time. Because if you're really watching the breath, you have to put some energy in watching your feet moving. And, you know, if you do, try and do the breath as well. Actually, your mindfulness is split between the movement of the feet and the breath. Because you have to know the feet are moving to actually know where you're going for safety. If you're just really on the breath and focus on the breath, you don't know where you're walking. So, you know, to try doing the breath meditation while you're walking would be splitting your mindfulness in two places. And so it's not very successful.
Can you do that with combining the breath with walking? In other words, you choose with the walking? You can have that thing, you talk about that there.
It's not such a good thing, because then neither the breath is natural nor the walking is natural. Sort of, you know, the breath impinges on the pace of the feet, and the feet impinges on upon the rhythm of the breath. So it's much better to do one or the other, but not both. And for those of you who get very hungry in the morning, you can do multitasking by having a spoon in each hand. But please don't do things like that. Okay, I think I've had enough now. So it's 9 o'clock, I managed to spin it out. I got like many more questions there today, so there wasn't that many after all. So hopefully you've enjoyed today so far, and the best is yet to come. So the night is still young, it's only 9 o'clock, and you can ask yourself, what time do you go to bed when you're at home? So why go to bed now? How many of you go to bed at 9 o'clock when you're at home? You do? My goodness! I'd never believe that someone would actually put their hand up for that. Okay, so, those who put their hand up, you can go to bed now if you want. Those who didn't put their hand up. No, just take it easy and do what's necessary, but don't get too lazy. Now's the time to start encouraging a bit more energy up, and it's a very cool evening. And sometimes that when you've meditated all day, you do actually get some momentum up of peace and stillness. And so it's a waste of time, you know, wasting that by going to bed. If you've got some stillness, you've got some peace, you've got some energy, stay up a little bit longer, just meditate a bit more, try it out. If you do actually go a bit later, you can always sleep in the morning. This is actually why we have the loose schedule, because sometimes you feel that you've got a lot of peace, a lot of stillness, a lot of energy, and carry on meditating later into the evening. You can sleep in later on. Or if you are tired now, you can sort of go to bed now and you get up early. And when you wake up early, just come and sit. And if you miss time, you've got up too early, you can always go to bed again later on. So just work with your energies, rather than having all these ideas, I've got to go to bed at this time, I've got to get up at that time. Because I know that happened to me in my early years as a monk. But sometimes in the evening, you got really sort of hot in your meditation, you're really going well, but you think, got to get up at 3 o'clock, so I forced myself to go to bed and go to sleep. It would be much better if I'd have carried on meditating till 12, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and then be allowed to sleep in until dawn. Because then you actually work with the pace of your meditation. So during the rest of this retreat, if your meditation is really going good, carry on meditating. Doesn't matter what time it is, you can always catch up later on with sleep. But if you feel tired, just go and take a rest. Be kind. Okay, everyone was nodding. Yes, take a rest. Okay, enjoy the evening. Good night.